Hey, everybody. Welcome to Talking About Birds, the only Cardinals podcast that, like the Cardinals, gets mediocre replacements for their rotation. Nate has decided to leave me. He's flown off to Europe to gallivant around. I think he's on an island in the Mediterranean somewhere, mining for Bitcoin or fishing, or I don't really know what he's doing. He actually really didn't tell me that much other than, I have to go for work, so you got to find somebody to record with you. It was pretty much how the conversation went. But in his absence, I have a more than suitable replacement arm adding to the rotation. The bit was provided by him. I'd like to welcome C70, host of Meet Me at Mutual, Cardinal 70 on Twitter, the Podfather, the Taxman, a proud member of the Bird Squad, my very special friend, Daniel Shoptaw, on the show this week.
That is a welcome, Ben. I appreciate that. And again, just like the Cardinals, you're going for the old dynamic and bringing in the experienced veterans to take care of whatever Nate is.
Yeah. How's your hamstring feeling? Everything okay?
Well, since I don't actually move, it's fine. Yeah. If I actually tried to do something, I don't know if it would hold.
That's a good strategy. Daniel, how are you? You've been potting like crazy. I know you are doing, you are in your time where you're constantly trying to replace Allen. I know you're doing team previews right now. How are things in Daniel Shoptaw's world right now?
They're pretty good. They're pretty good. A little chaotic this week. Yeah, we've done the Monday recorded the Cubs preview. We got the Reds coming up tomorrow night. And then, yeah, talking to Allen every week about the high school. And, you know, then we'll have the regular show on Friday night. So it is a little bit busy this week, but that's what happens at the beginning of the season. You got all these things you want to do, and then the season starts, and you're back to your normal grind.
And did I understand you recorded a different podcast before we hopped on this podcast?
Well, Allen, in the last few weeks, we've just recorded a 5-10 minute little section that we put at the end of the show. So not an entire show in front of this one. I'm not ready for a double header yet.
Okay. Yeah. That too early in the season for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I do have another question before we get into like the actual baseball conversation. I know you're a massive Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that on several or in shapes and forms. How do you feel about Dune? Are you a Dune fan? Are you a fan of the books, the movies, anything?
I have never actually gotten into Dune. Wow. I have heard good things. My son went and saw part one when it was out and really seemed to like it. Looks forward to going to see part two. I've heard it's a very, very interesting world, but I've never dived into it. So I assume you are, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah, I'm. So I would say the first new version of the old Dune I think I saw when I was younger, and the David Lynch one, and it made no sense to me, and that movie is insane for a thousand different reasons, but part one really got me into it. Then I started reading the books, and then I've actually seen part two twice already in theaters, and there's a lot of similarities to Star Wars. It's some people even accuse George Lucas of, you know, stealing Frank Herbert's ideas and things like that. So I was curious. I could see it being your thing, but it's also, I don't know, it's just more media you have to watch.
Well, that's true. And I need to, you know, there's so many things that I keep thinking, okay, well, they're on Max or they're on Disney Plus or whatever. And I'm just going to, I'll sit down and I never actually sit down and watch them. So, but that's one of those things that I think I should do that.
It's a good one. I think you would like it. And we can, I don't know, whenever you do that, we'll have you back on and we can talk about it. But I'm kind of, I'm a little obsessed right now. I very much enjoyed it.
The spice will flow.
I can see I'm premonitioning this is going to be a good episode. The spice is flowing through my brains and I can feel it. All right. Let's talk about some actual baseball. There's a lot of injury news to sift through. And I think we can kind of just, you know, take this one at a time. So Sonny Gray, last time Nate and I talked, Sonny Gray had just had an issue with his hamstring. His future for the season was really uncertain. It seemed like he probably wasn't going to start opening day. And we didn't really know. I was kind of trying to tamp down the worry around this injury. And I think I was mostly correct. We did learn that Sonny Gray threw a 20-pitch bullpen session that was closely monitored by President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak, Holly Marmol, and the medical staff. That seemed to go well. Sonny Gray said, "I guess the best answer that I can give you is that it felt normal." I'd love to hear, how are you feeling about where Sonny Gray's at and I guess his prospects for starting with the big league club this year?
I think right now they're really good. And I agree with you. It's very easy to jump to the conclusion that a pitcher is going to be out forever or somebody else is going to be out forever. And we'll talk about those kind of players soon. But, you know, the medical staff is, and I don't want to, I'm not putting this on the medical staff because there are a lot of things that go on with this. But when we hear injury so often, it's a, it'll be this. And all of a sudden it's, you know, that we've never actually see that person again. And so, yeah, but when he came off with a hamstring, it's like, okay, it's not an arm. We're probably, you know, I didn't expect him to necessarily make opening day, but it sounds like now that he very well may.
Yeah, I'm curious if it's a good idea for him to make opening day. I'm curious what their motivation is, because I kind of looked at this originally like we have this guy for 3 years, you know, hopefully that we're talking about, you know, around 90 or so starts of Sonny Gray in a Cardinals uniform. Minus one in the very beginning isn't that big of a deal. What we learned today is that he's going to throw a bullpen session tomorrow. And presumably, if that goes well, ramp back up. I think I'm okay with that. I'm a little like, what's the rush? But I also understand the Cardinals wanting to prove that they made changes that are meaningful and will stick, I guess, early in the year. You know, it's like the visual of Sonny Gray starting is very important to them.
It very well may be. I do wonder if this isn't being driven a little bit more by Sonny Gray, though, because of the fact that he's dealt with the hamstrings before. He knows what he needs to do. He knows how this feels. If it was a situation where he thought he was going to miss a lot of time, I feel like he would be backing off. But when he feels good, I think the club's just kind of letting him maybe take the reins on this. And, you know, obviously, yeah, you're right. They would like to see him out there opening day. But, you know, if they had to push it back and he was the home opener starter, that wouldn't be a bad thing either. So I have a feeling that he's having a lot of input in this.
Yeah. And that's funny, right? Like if this was happening, the same situation was happening to Matthew Liberatore or some younger guy who wasn't in his early 30s, they would probably tell him how it's going to go. When in this situation, like you said, it's probably mostly driven by him. He's a pro. He's been around for almost a decade now, or at least been in MLB for almost a decade. And yeah, I think it makes sense to defer to him to some degree.
Yeah, and I mean, and again, he was fine last year, but it was 2022, right? He had it two or three times that year. So it's not like it's something like, hey, I think I'm fine, but I'm going to try this out and make sure. He's got a pretty good baseline. And so I think you're right that the Cardinals wouldn't rush this because they do have him for 3 years. There's, you know, if he's out for, you know, if he comes back out there and hurts himself worse and he's out for a month, this really blows up in their face, right? Yeah. They definitely don't want that.
No, I think all the starting rotation pieces are really important. We talked about it. Like Sonny Gray is the one piece on the entire team where if he goes down for any significant amount of time, it's really hard to see how the Cardinals replace those innings. It's really hard to see how the Cardinals win the Central. It's really easy to get doom and gloom without, you know, the Cy Young runner up.
Yeah, Yeah, but and again, y'all have talked about it. We've talked about it. Everybody in Cardinal Nation has talked about it all winter long, that idea that this rotation is held together by Sonny Gray. I mean, he is the duct tape to this thing. And if he's not there, it all does kind of fall apart. There's not anybody backing him up. There's not a Jordan Montgomery or a Blake Snell or anybody like that. There's just, you know, maybe, you know, a Sativa Mats that looked like last year, okay, but you know, that's about the best you can hope for.
How are you feeling about Steven Matz right now, sitting here on March 13th?
I mean, okay, I guess.
Like, yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I haven't looked. I know, I don't think any of the rest of the starters have pitched just superbly this spring, but I'd have to look. But you know, again, until Matz. He had that nice run, but then he got hurt. And I know a lot of people think he found something and maybe he can get back to that. And maybe he can.
Yeah.
But it's also very possible he had a good 5 or 6 weeks and that was it. He was going to fall off even if he didn't get hurt. So I'm very hesitant to put anything on Steven Matz until we see it for a couple months.
Yeah, we've seen spits and starts. It didn't really work in New York, with the Mets when he was coming up and they had the six great pitchers that were on the roster. He had three really good months with the Blue Jays. And then, I think even the contract that he was given, it was 4 years, $44 million, if I remember correctly. Like nobody is expecting him to save the rotation. I do think he's capable of giving us 150 innings that aren't completely embarrassing. But outside of that, you know, he's not saving this rotation. Like you said, it's slapped together with duct tape and gum and I don't know, a spring maybe.
Yeah. I mean, if he's your number two, it could be okay, but even at best, it's not, you know, it's not world beating.
Right.
It's just, eh.
Just, eh. I agree. You mentioned some of the other options out there. Jordan Montgomery is still out there. Blake Snell is still out there. I think that none of these are going to happen. Mm-hmm. I would have to bet Jordan Montgomery would be higher on the list. Although there seem to be reports of him not even wanting to entertain a reunion with the Cardinals, which I've found, interesting. A deal right before we hopped on the call, happened. Dylan Cease has been traded from the White Sox to the San Diego Padres in a deal that I think seems pretty fair for both sides. What I tried to do was put together a Cardinals version of that deal, and I kind of just want to hear your reaction to that, if that all makes sense. Dylan Cease going to the Padres, and the Padres are trading right-handed pitcher Drew Thorpe, outfielder Samuel Zavala, right-handed pitcher Jairo Iriarte. I've never heard of this guy. I can't say his name. And then a relief pitcher named Steven Wilson, who was on the big league club last year. The Cardinals version of that trade, and you guys can beat me up if I'm like totally way off on this, but essentially I was just trying to match up players with similar age and pedigree and experience in the minors that would kind of line up. So that would be the Cardinals equivalent of Tinkens, Juan Bencho, Gordon Graceffo, and Steven Wilson. There's not really a Steven Wilson on the Cardinals, so I just threw Ryan Fernandez in there, who I think is probably better than Steven Wilson. He's younger, has more control, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just curious, what do you think? Tinkens, Juan Bencho, Gordon Graceffo, Ryan Fernandez for Dylan Cease for 2 years. What's your kind of reaction to that?
It's awful high. Right. Yep. I mean, it's difficult when you don't have, you know, somebody was pointing out in Twitter right before we came on. I don't remember who it was.
We call it X on this podcast, Daniel.
Well, yeah, but I'm old. so I call it Twitter.
That was a joke. I'm not a fan. Yeah.
I mean, you know, it is what it is. That somebody pointed out that if the Cardinals were better at developing high level talent, maybe they could move a Hintz or a Roby or something like that, but they can't because they can't replace them. And yes, Cease would be here for 2 years, but you know, after that, you're either signing him to big deal or he's gone. And then what do you have? So yeah, I mean, the Cardinals would never do that trade either.
No. But. No, they wouldn't make that trade. And I mean, so I totally hear what you're saying. Why would you trade? I think you're particularly picking out Tinkens and Graceffo. Why would you trade two things that you have so little of, that you haven't shown a history of? But then my kind of pushback to that is, well, they haven't really crossed the finish line as far as becoming major league talent. So do you sell them while their stock is high, or do we have faith that the Cardinals brain trust can, you know, and Dusty Blake and all the people who are involved actually bring these guys to be what we think they could be?
Yeah, that's a fair point, because you're right. I mean, you could be, if you, you might be able to trade them now and then they not turn into anything. I guess it just depends. And it's also possible they don't turn anything into anything for the Cardinals, but they would for somebody else, right? We know
right,
this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just, you know, the pitching depth is still not necessarily that exciting yet. And I would hate to trade away two guys like that. But, you know, again, we were just talking about how Sonny Gray is the one that holds that together. So if you really felt like that was your piece, you go for it.
Yeah.
But do you think that if you get a Cease that this team is automatically, you know, like a October favorite or something?
October favorite, no. Central favorite, I could maybe squint hard enough to see that. I still think that the Central is pretty wide open, even though Pecota and the other forms of projections seem to like the Cardinals this year. I think it's pretty wide open. I do think, you know, well, I was going to say that Cease has been fairly sturdy, but he, you know, they are until they aren't. Look at Garrett Cole. I think Garrett Cole has the most innings pitched in baseball over the last 7 years. And then he, you know, he's having an elbow issue that's being evaluated right now. So you never really know. And, you know, you make a move like this and you're the Cardinals, who never really push in, not because they can't, but because they decide not to. And then Dylan Cease or somebody else goes down and it's a wash season anyways. It really could set a club like the Cardinals back, 5 years, you know, really quickly there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you have to win this year. And if something goes bad, yikes.
So I agree with you. You have to win this year, but I don't think that the Cardinals are acting like they have to win this year. I don't feel like they're pushing their chips in. I feel like they're still being risk adverse and still being, you know, it's all about floor. Do you get the sense that they're pushing in this year?
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think that we thought as fans that last year would be a wake up call and that they would be, you know, very aggressive, but it still feels like they're kind of thinking that last year was an aberration.
Yes.
That we can stick with what got us here so far. And you know, to some degree, they're right. Right. I mean, I think that y'all have talked about it too, that last year everything went wrong and it could have been, you know, that could have been a 500 team, which is not great, but is not the disaster that we saw. So, yeah, I don't think so, because I don't think you go get Lynn and Gibson if you're very aggressive.
Right. I mean, Nolan Arenado had a down defensive year like that. That I think that is all you need to kind of illustrate what last year was. It's the most, maybe one of the best defensive third basemen of all time, like, lost his touch out of nowhere. Everything just kind of went that way. I do think, you know, to the point of have they learned their lesson, I think that you're right. I think that they look at last year as an aberration. There is a weird, morbid curiosity that I have that if the Cardinals lose 90 games this year or even more of what DeWitt and Mo and Co would do. I don't want it to happen. I really hope that it doesn't happen. I would bet money that it will not happen, but I would be very, very curious to see how they handle these very uncharted waters that they seemingly are not prepared for.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, they do have a lot of these guys coming off the roster, right? You know, they've signed all these guys to 1 year contracts and they could decline options. They could have some free up some money. And I don't know what the next year's free agent market looks like. But, you know, I think you'd also see some significant changes. You know, Ollie Marmol would not be back. John Mozeliak would be somewhere else in the organization. And, you know, whether it's Heim Bloom or Michael Gersh or Randy Flores or somebody else that takes that spot. And they would probably start looking at doing something differently. But I agree. I don't think it's going to happen. And I don't, you know, we kind of thought some of this stuff would happen after last year and it didn't. Yeah. So who knows?
Right. Yeah, that just made, I was just kind of mulling this over as I was doing the dishes today. I was thinking about the idea. I think I brought up Alex Cora last week as a interesting option to manage the Cardinals. Obviously, Skip Schumacher's contract is up at the end of this year. He would be an obvious fit for the managerial replacement for the Cardinals. Yadier Molina, Albert Pujols have both thrown their hat in the ring. I don't know, maybe Daniel Descalso is trying to become a manager. It'll be a very interesting conversation. And I think I almost feel bad for Ollie Marmol in that I mean, if he doesn't win, he loses his job. Right. And that's just how it is. And he can obviously only control so much of that. If Nolan Arenado has a down defensive year again, I don't think that that's Ollie Marmol's fault, but he will be the one who's out the door.
Yeah. I mean, it is hard because you would like to give somebody like Ollie a good long run,
yeah,
because he is so young. And I think that he has shown some promise. And, you know, again, they won the division his first year, right? But if you go back to back years in St. Louis, you can't do that. And the Cardinals at least have been pretty open about saying, hey, look, we like him, but you got to win.
I can't imagine a job being like that. It's so public. Mm. You're having very frank conversations that must be difficult. And that is why I am sitting behind a microphone.
That's the only reason right there.
I have the talent, Daniel. I could do it.
Yes.
You're
not going to come off the mountaintop, figuratively and literally.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I also want to talk about, we learned basically right after we recorded last week that Lars Nootbaar has been sidelined with rib fractures. He is expected to be out for 2 weeks. And really the way that Mo was talking about it was like, obviously baseball is a very rotational sport. You use your ribs when you do that. And essentially he's not going to be cleared to do baseball activities until he's not feeling pain. I hope that's 2 weeks. I don't imagine this will be less. But right now the Cardinals are sitting without their starting center fielder, Tommy Edman, who's obviously still dealing with his wrist issue. And now Nootbaar is going down. How are you feeling about the outfield to begin the season? Who are you looking at? What's going through your mind?
Well, I know how much that y'all have advocated for Victor Scott II. And I will say that door has opened more. But I'm still not convinced. Again, if Tommy Edman's out till June or July, and if Lars Nootbaar is going to be out till May or June, then okay, maybe there's a case. But if it really is that Lars is going to be, you know, maybe back by mid-April and Tommy the same, then I just don't think that they go through the hoops that they're going to have to go through to put him on this roster for that length of time. You know, I know there's this, you know, this out there about Vince Coleman, and they told Vince Coleman he was coming up for a week, and he said, okay, but you're not going to be able to send me back. Of course, they didn't send him back.
But yeah.
I think about what this roster looks like. And, you know, when you have people like Tommy Edman and Lars Nootbaar then coming off the injured list, somebody's got to go somewhere. And so I just don't think they jumped out those hoops when they've got Michael Cianni, who they've kept for all winter long, who can play center field and get you by for a couple of weeks as your backup.
Yeah. I think the Michael Cianni signing or acquisition is probably going to look really smart. Especially like you said, he's kind of a defensive ace. I'm really curious to see. So Alec Burleson's having a great spring training, which I really like his batted ball profile. I really like everything that he does except for run. He's not a great runner, but me neither, you know? So I relate to him on that, but he's got 11 hits, 4 walks and only 1 strikeout. He's got a nice home run. I think he hit earlier this week. I also think, like, is Brendan Donovan going to get starts in the outfield? Dylan Carlson hit a homer today. It's not ideal, but I think the Cardinals position player depth really comes into play here. And I think, if I was Ollie Marmol, I would be starting Brendan Donovan in the corners probably tomorrow, just to kind of shore that up.
It sounded like that maybe if it wasn't this week, then next, that they would probably have Donovan out there some, you know, still being hesitant with his elbow after the surgery. But, you know, as far as I know, we've seen people with weaker arms out there, and as long as he'll catch the fly balls. You know, the only real downside here is if you have Jordan Walker on one side and Alec Burleson on the other side. Whoever's playing center is going to have to cover a lot of ground and hope that nothing gets down the lines. But, you know, I do think that, you know, they can make it work for a limited period of time. Yeah. Now, again, if with fractures, that's better than breaks or whatever. And if Newt Barr's going back, but if these guys are going to be out till June, then they're probably going to have to do something else.
Yeah. I am less worried about Newt than I am about Tommy Edman, just because Tommy Edman's not even swinging a bat right now. Ribs are much more predictable than wrists. It's kind of how I'm feeling as far as recovery.
Yeah. I mean, and we've seen Newt in, you know, still looking at pitches and stuff like that. He's still trying to go through and do as much as he can until he's ready to swing. So hopefully, you know, he doesn't, you know, have to really ramp up a lot. But yeah, Tommy Edman, you know, we don't really hear much about Tommy, right? I mean, it's just like, you know, every once in a while we get an update and all of a sudden, you know, like the last update is, oh, well, he started his rehab back up. It's like, oh, he stopped it? I didn't know this, you know? Yeah. And so you just, and you're right. I feel like this has like All-Star break kind of written all over it the way it's been going.
Yeah, and then that has us really putting a lot of faith in Dylan Carlson. Mm-hmm. You already brought up Michael Ciani. That really kind of elevates his role with the club, especially if Dylan is not hitting, which is a huge question mark. And the way that we've watched the Cardinals handle Dylan for almost 4 years at this point, and you know, the leash is short. If he's not hitting, he's not playing, and I don't really know what to say about him at this point, other than I want to see. I'm of the opinion that I would rather see Dylan Carlson start in center field over Tommy Edman. 100%. I don't think that that's a popular opinion, but it's hard for me to imagine he is a fourth outfielder.
Yeah. Oh, I'm, you know, this Tommy Edman in center field thing is very weird to me. I mean, I get Tommy played some really, you know, he really did play well out there last year, but it still feels like he's an infielder playing outfield. And
yeah.
And Dylan Carlson's a good fielder. It's not like he's, you know, he's not Jordan Walker. He's not Lars Newtbar. You know, he's a good fielder. And I do hope that if it's like, okay, Tommy's going to be out for, you know, 2 months, a month, whatever the case may be, that he gets to play like every day and just somehow gets into that groove that we know we've seen him. I mean, he was what, third in rookie of the year in 2020.
Right.
I mean, granted, 2020, take what it's worth, but he's got the talent. He's just got to be able to put it together and we'll see if he can.
Yeah. All right. We can move on from injury news. I wanted to say that Sejacy and Prieto have really impressed me during spring. I was curious, any players that you've really liked? I don't know. We haven't really been able to watch that much, but anybody whose performance you wanted to call out or you've been impressed by sort of early going in the first couple of weeks of real spring training games?
Yeah, I mean, you pointed out that Alec Burleson has really kind of come out and done well, and I think that's kind of stood out. You know, we've seen some good stuff out of Riley O'Brien, who is kind of, I think, probably solidifying his role in this thing.
Well, I noticed you picked him up in our fantasy lead in the bird scored. So you're obviously betting on him having a great year.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with my theme of the week on my team. I play this fantasy so everybody feels better about themselves.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's my goal. But yeah, I think that, you know, I think that from what I can tell, and you're right, I haven't seen very many games. I got to see Sunday's game, I think, but that's about it. And there's the levels of competition are weird, but it seems to me that we've had pretty good success out of the bullpen guys.
Yeah.
The guys that we kind of thought we would. Maybe John King's been rough. Wilking Rodriguez has not looked great. But those weren't guys that we were necessarily relying on at all. And if they got anything, great. So, you know, that part of the postseason or off season gets a check mark maybe, but, and of course, Victor Scott's obviously made an impression as well.
Yeah. Victor Scott has been really exciting. And yeah, I think John King, you know, if spring training were to end today, he's kind of pitched his way out of a bullpen spot and is probably in AAA or, on waivers or something to start the year, but it has not been a great one for him. And, when you have performances like Riley O'Brien, when you have performances like what Kittredge is doing and some of the others in the bullpen, it's kind of hard to see him have a spot. I didn't really understand why we got him in that trade to begin with, other than the Rangers offered him up. But, you know,
somebody
I guess,
had to pitch the rest of the year. So that's probably part of it. And he pitched well. I mean, he pitched well for them, but I think it sounds like more of a, like we were talking with Steven Matz, it just wasn't necessarily something that was going to translate to permanency.
Right. Right. All right. So I want to move along. Lance Lynn. So I haven't watched a ton of spring training baseball, mostly because it's been hard to watch because I don't know why the schedule is the way that it is, but it drives me insane. But we did have Lance Lynn and Ali Marmol were tossed from a game. I was curious, did you watch this live? Have you been able to catch up with it post this incident happening?
I don't think it was televised, but I saw some people had video from the ballpark. And I mean, you know, it's a good Angel Hernandez day when he can throw out a guy twice in the same game. That's impressive.
This is amazing. So yeah, if you didn't see this, it was extremely entertaining. First off, it's so good to have Lance Lynn back on the club. you know, he just immediately delivers with every Lance Lynning type thing that you want to see. Essentially, he took issue with a call while he was pitching to Joey Gallo while the Cardinals were playing the Nationals. Lance Lynn did his Lance Lynn thing and told Angel Hernandez that he disagreed with him. Angel Hernandez ejected him a couple of pitches after that, after it seeming like Lance was just kind of, you know, huffing and puffing as he does. Lance Lynn then walks out to the bullpen to get, I think he was going out there to throw 15 or 20 pitches or something to finish his workload, which is pretty standard. And I didn't know that this was even a protocol or a rule or something that was expected from pitch or players once they were removed from a game in spring training. But Angel Hernandez threw Lance Lynn out of the bullpen and I think also threw Ali Marmol out of the game. I think just out of spite at that point. And I'm sure Ali Marmol was letting him hear it, but it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah. I mean, it's spring training. I mean, that was Derek Gould's point, you know, it's spring training. I mean, it's one thing to throw a pitcher out, which is pretty silly in spring training as well, but to go to the extra effort of throwing him out of the bullpen where he is trying to do work, you know, trying to get this workload up. I mean, you know, we always like to say that it's spring training for everybody. It was not spring training for Angel Hernandez. He was in mid-season form already.
He had mid-season form already. It was it last year that Kyle Schwarber almost murdered him after some bad calls. I it's amazing that we still have to watch this guy officiate games, but
it's amazing that he sues Major League Baseball because of he thinks he's being discriminated against, and it's like, how much lack of self-awareness can you have?
There's some connected dot of like name recognition with an officiator. The more you know that guy's name, the worse that he probably is, right? And even casual baseball fans know who Angel Hernandez is and know how bad he is. He's not doing anything to help himself. It's incredible. I will say in this instance, it was pure entertainment, though. I will take Angel Hernandez versus Lance Lynn any night of the week. Always entertaining. This did make me think. I was curious about this. KBO, Korean Baseball Organization, they have started using robo-umps this year. They are 19 games into using robo-umps, and they have a 99.9% success rate. What are your thoughts on that, I guess, just very generally, what do you think of that that number? And then, I don't know, moving away from the Angel Hernandezes of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I get why people like it, although we've also seen how imperfect it is. You know, we've seen that, you know, the automated ball strikes at Memphis was one of the reasons that Zach Thompson was terrible because it wouldn't call the high pitch, you know, and so he had to adjust and it was right in the middle of the plate and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, for me, because I am old and I tend to tell people to get off my yard.
Yeah.
I do like the human element of this. I mean, I get that umpires are going to make mistakes, and I'm not a big fan of instant replay. I'm of the opinion that if you can see it with your eye that it's wrong, we need to flip it. The Dinkinger, the you know, a Galarraga, those kind of things, they need to be flipped. But if you're taking 15 minutes to see if a guy's hit the lace of his shoe, I don't think that's what it needs to be for. I think we could just move on. So I like the human element of being able to frame pitches and stuff like that. But, you know, again, I have a feeling that some sort of automated system is coming.
I do too. I think that the challenge system is more likely than the fully automated system, which I'm generally okay with. I think the time thing is a big part that I think about. My biggest, I'm a huge fan of catchers and just catching. And, you know, I think I was indoctrinated by Mike Matheny and Yadier Molina. So just the art of catching, the art of framing. And my biggest concern with the fully automated strike zone is the elimination of that aspect of the game, which I do think is would be a large detraction, even though I think it's probably mostly for nerds like you and I. I just don't want to see it go away.
Yeah, I mean, is the catcher just about to be to the point where he can just sit in a chair and, you know, kind of kick it out of the way, I guess, when somebody comes to home plate.
Right. Now, with that being said, if that is the way that it's going, the Cardinals are in a good place with Wilson Contreras and Ivan Herrera essentially just being offensive first catchers. So maybe, you know, in the immediate future, it would help the Cardinals out. But
the time that it'll come will be the time where they've developed an actual defensive catcher. And that's when it'll come along.
Jimmy Crooks will be the next platinum glove winning catcher or some guy the Cardinals haven't drafted yet. Yeah, you're probably right. All right. Anything else you wanted to talk about? Spring training, anything in that world?
I don't think so. I think that it's just, you know, if nothing else, we know that the Cardinals are not going to win spring training, and that's probably a good thing.
Based off last year's result, I think it's a fantastic thing. I'm give me less home runs, give me less wins, give me less everything. Save it all up for the year, especially with some of the kids performing so well. It's all going according to plan, I think. All right. We'll take a quick break and then we'll get into our NL Central team preview. We're doing the Brewers this week. So, Daniel, I don't know if you knew that, but you're going to help me break down the Brewers. Before we talk about them, I want to remind everyone that this show is listener supported. We really appreciate all our current patrons, all of our Birds Quarters. We are almost done with our Birds Scored Fantasy Baseball Draft. Where Daniel Shoptaw has taken the move of just drafting all of the Cardinals players, which I think might work out well, might not work out well. We'll see how that goes.
We would be closer if you would draft your player. But
am I on the okay? Maybe I'll do that while I'll hand the mic over to you, and you can I'll make a draft pick. Please, if you have the sickness in your brain that you want like this show and that you want to support us. $2 is the lowest Patreon tier that gets you in the bird score. That gets you kind of, you know, in the system. And if you have the willingness to spend more than that, we really appreciate it. But thank you to our existing patrons and anyone who may be considering. If you are not considering that, or if you just say, why the hell would I give you money? This thing is for free. That's fine. You can rate and review this podcast on whatever platform you're listening to it right on it right now. 5 stars only. Please do that. We are on Twitter at Talk About Birds. We are on Instagram at Talking About Birds. Two different handles for two different platforms. You can email us questions, comments, concerns, ideas, bits, really anything to talkaboutbirds@gmail.com. This show is available on Spotify. So listen to us there if you prefer. We have a TikTok. If you want to look at my face, Nate's face, go check us out on TikTok. We are on YouTube as well. So many channels to watch us or listen to us. It is obnoxious. I know. You can find all of that information at talkingaboutbirds.com. We have t-shirts, the Patreon, listen to shows. Everything is available there. You can also call us or text us at 848-48-BIRDS. That is 848-482-4737. Daniel, if you'd like to take a minute to plug anything, please let it rip.
Yeah, I want to say, first of all, I did not turn my camera on. For anybody that does want to watch this on YouTube or on TikTok, you do not have to worry about that.
I'll do a drawing of your face just, you know, do it for however want to make it look.
Yeah, probably better than it would have been if we turned the camera on, so it's fine. You will find me at C70. The shows are Meet Me at Mutual and Gateway to Baseball Heaven. You can find them most of the places that you find this podcast, probably all of the same. I do have Meet Me at Mutual is on YouTube as well, although it is just audio, so you're safe as well. You got a Substack if you want to check that out, cardinal70.substack.com, right over there. Once or twice a week, depending on what's going on. I know once or twice every couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Not once or twice a week. It's been a while since I've been that regular. I can't think of anything else. We've got the Cardinal Six coming up on Twitter when the season starts. We've got the Bombs Away going on Twitter when the season starts. So follow me and you'll be harassed by a lot of stuff.
Yeah, if you're listening to this show and not already listening to Daniel Shapton's other work, I don't understand how you found us, but I guess thanks for that. I know you just had Kyle Reese on, friend of the show, on your show recently, and you guys talked about prospects. Is it the Dirty 35 this year? What I don't know.
Yeah, plus 15. It's Kyle. He puts a number on it and then he ranks another like dozen players. So
I still have that show in my queue. I've listened to about half of it. The show, it's almost a 2-hour ep.
Yep. It's a long
if you're not already listening to that, I highly recommend you go check all of that out. And again, Daniel, thank you for hopping on here and replacing Nate, who again has left me for Europe. It's some stunt for attention, I think.
What are the chances that he gets stuck over there, do you think?
So he did send me some pictures. They were exploring some ancient castle or some old European thing at night. And, Nate is not great at seeing things at night. So the odds of him like walking into like a catacomb or a dungeon or into the ocean, I mean, they're higher than, he might not come back. I don't know. We'll see.
It's a non-zero chance.
Non-zero chance. Now, I don't want anything to actually happen to my dear, dear friend and podcast host, but,
you don't want to host the show every week.
No, and we have promised if either of us die, we have to keep the show going just out of spite. And I would have to follow that. I don't want to have to do that. I couldn't just talk to myself all the time.
No.
All right. Well, Nate, if you're listening to this, I hope you're alive, buddy. And I hope you have not fallen into an ocean or into a catacomb. Let's move along. We are going to continue our series on the NL Central team preview. This week, we're going to talk about the Brewers, who have been a very interesting team, a team who I think is probably or is fairly hard to predict, a team that probably is going to be better than their projected 80 and 82 win-loss total from that is projections coming from FanGraphs. And I'll just hit some of their notable moves, and then we can kind of chat about them. The biggest move, of course, ace Cy Young contender Corbin Burnes has been traded to the Baltimore Orioles in a pretty large deal. Brandon Woodruff, who they actually re-signed after non-tendering, will likely miss the majority of the season with shoulder issues, but is back on the club. They also brought in sluggers Rhys Hoskins and Gary Sanchez. And I missed this in the trade for Corbin Burnes. They brought back Joey Ortiz, who is going to likely be their starting third baseman, it appears, and DL Hall, a flame throwing pitcher. Daniel, how are you feeling about the Brewers offseason? How are you feeling about their place in the Central, and then obviously how it kind of compares to what the Cardinals have done?
Well, I would say that probably changed just now, because I just saw posted in a different Discord that Devin Williams has two stress fractures in his back and he's going to miss about 3 months.
Wow.
That puts a real wrinkle into what the Brewers may do. Now, I agree. I think that you know, again, if they were in a different division than the Central, we wouldn't even give it any consideration. But it's very interesting that the Brewers have kind of gone from, what, the last couple of years, it was like they didn't have enough offense, right? They had the pitching, right. They didn't have enough offense. And now they get rid of Burns, they don't have Woodruff. And you start thinking, well, maybe they've got enough offense to get by with the pitching staff they have. I just think they're perfect for the NL Central because they're just kind of mediocre as well.
Yeah, nobody really wants it, which is, I mean, I really think it's kind of the snake eating its own tail because no team is really pushing, no other team is pushing. You know, why would you go spend more money when your neighbors aren't spending more money and you have just as good of a chance of making the playoffs as anybody else? Front of the rotation is Freddie Peralta, who is a very good pitcher. But then it kind of turns into a scrap heap shortly after that. Wade Miley, Jacob Junis, Colin Ray, and DL Hall are their projected starters. DL Hall, again, could be great, but really hasn't proved it at this point.
Right.
And yeah, I'm kind of wrapping my mind around the Devin Williams situation, which I'm learning in real time. That's a huge miss for them. He's arguably a top three closer in baseball. Arguably has maybe one of the best pitches in baseball, and losing out on him, that puts people like Trevor McGill and Abner Uribe, in line to close out games for them.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just a few couple of years since they lost Hader or traded off Hader, and you know, when they had both of those guys, it was that the pitching staff, the whole staff was just amazing. But now it's like, you know, you would like to think that you could get to the sixth or seventh and be able to turn it over to somebody. But even then, this game's not, you know, if you're playing the Brewers, you just never going to feel like you're out of it, I don't think.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, kind of what you're talking about, like, is this more of an offense-based team going forward? I think that's the big question. I think, you know, I have a lot of faith in Willie Adames being pretty solid. I have a lot of faith, or not even a lot. I have a decent amount of faith that William Contreras, Wilson's brother, is going to be fairly solid. But then you're looking at Christian Yelich. Can he repeat what he did last year? Rhys Hoskins hasn't played baseball for a year. Gary Sanchez is kind of a hot potato that just keeps getting passed around. Is a guy that can hit 30 bombs, but hasn't done anything. And it's fair to assume that Jackson Churio, their superstar prospect, is going to be starting in center field. But he is 20 years old.
Yeah.
Another huge move, I guess we'll just keep talking about Jackson Churio. He signed an 8-year extension that runs through 2031 plus two club options for 32 and 33 for $82 million. So obviously the Brewers believe in this kid. I think if you look at the numbers, if you look at the ratings, if the pedigree, the write-ups, everything, he will probably be a very, very good baseball player. But will he be good in 2024? It's hard for me to really see how this all works out for the Brewers in the immediate future.
Yeah, because, I mean, even if he's rookie of the year, right? I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that's enough for the Brewers. That kind of depends on what the rest of the rookies in the league are. But, yeah, I don't know. I think that the Brewers feel like, and I talked to, I did my Brewers preview last week, and so I talked to Jack Stern from one of the Brewers sites, and I asked him if they were going for it this year or if it was like a, you know, kind of a rebuild. He said they're kind of going for it this year and next year at the same time, and that gets you, I mean, it's a difficult place to be. You can kind of get caught in the middle sometimes. I have a feeling that if things don't go well, that they'll probably sell off their pieces, you know, at the trade deadline and try to do a kind of like the Cardinals did last year, a quick rebuild and be back at it next year.
Yeah, I think, you know, they are primed to move players like Willie Adames. They're Rhys Hoskins is just written all over him, midseason acquisition by a team in the playoffs, maybe even Gary Sanchez. I would say Devin Williams, we'll see where he's at that point in the year. But it would not be surprising if the Brewers decide to move on from him. I think he has 2 years of control remaining after this. And obviously the Brewers have kind of proven in the past that they are a small market team that needs to make hard decisions. And that would definitely be one of them. Um, I, You know, I started this off by saying I imagine the Cardinals or the Brewers breaking their 80-82 projected record. But this conversation has almost kind of talked me out of that. Like, them winning 80 games might be a bit of a miracle.
I mean, again, you never know. I mean, it is the balanced schedule probably doesn't help them, just like it doesn't help anybody else in the Central, because you don't get to play each other all the time.
Right.
I do think, especially with the news from tonight, it does feel like it would be a little bit difficult to see them being very much over that, if at all.
Yeah. Let's start talking about or get into some league news that is going around right now. We have quite a bit of interesting things to talk about. What's crazy is that on March 20th and March 21st, we have real baseball happening. Padres and the Dodgers are playing a two-game series in Seoul, Korea. It's only two games. It's obviously really early in the calendar. I think I'm excited about this. I'm not sure how I feel about it. It's very strange, but it should be a great matchup.
Yeah, it should be. If it's like the other times they've been over there, you're watching it, you know, like really early in the morning.
I think it's 6 a.m. Eastern time.
Yeah. So, you know, it's get up, go get ready for work and watch some baseball, which is interesting. I guess it's what people in Hawaii do all the time.
That's a good point.
So it'd be like overnight in Hawaii, I guess. I mean, anyway, let's get a tangent there. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I think I was reading something that they made the trade for Cease like an hour before everybody was supposed to get on the plane. I think they expect to take him with them. So that's, hey, I mean, if you're going to have to learn your new teammates' names and stuff, I guess they, you know, 15, 16 hour plane ride is the way to do it. But yeah, I think that's fun. I mean, of course, you know, with Otani and Yamamoto on the Dodgers, it's going to be a huge draw for them out there. It's always fun to see baseball in slightly different places.
It is. You have to imagine the fans there are going to go absolutely nuts for it. And yeah, you, as you alluded to, the first game is going to be Tyler Glasnow and Yu Darvish. And obviously Shohei Ohtani will be DHing for the Dodgers. And then game two, Yamamoto versus Joe Musgrove. So it should be two great starts, especially with the Cease news. It's two, teams that are kind of going neck and neck, obviously one team stealing more headlines than the other. But it's pretty exciting, and I think I agree with you. It's more just, it's weird. It's the way that it's working is weird, and, I'll be fine, but, change is scary.
That is very, very true.
All right. Garrett Cole, I think we alluded to this earlier. Garrett Cole is expected to miss at least 1 to 2 months this year, to start this year. Looks like he is having an issue with his elbow. Tommy John seems to mostly be avoided for now. But, you know, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about as far as being able to bet on starting pitching and just where the sport's at. You know, you've been watching baseball longer than I have. Do you get the sense that this is becoming a bigger and bigger problem?
Maybe,
or am I overreacting?
Pitchers are. It's hard to know. I mean, because back in the 80s and stuff, people would have, you know, dead arm, or, you know, their career would just be over, and you really didn't know why, right? You know, and because they didn't necessarily have the advances that they have now, and now, you know, they're doing Tommy John, even maybe a little bit precautionary at times sometimes.
Right.
So it probably is a little bit more because people also didn't throw, you know, 90 on a regular basis back in the 80s, much less 100. And so you're getting some of that. But yeah, it's interesting to see. And I tell you, it's different. I was messaging with David Jones, my co-host on Gateway today. And I said, you know, back in our day, George Steinbrenner would already have bought Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell because yeah. Garrett Cole was out. Right. I mean, so he would not have worried about any kind of, luxury taxes. And, you know, the Yankees apparently checked in on Cease, but we'll see. They still may not do anything.
Yeah. They are in a funny spot. And obviously like this did not exist when Steinbrenner was, still manning the Yankees, but they are at a spot right now where their luxury tax threshold is such that every dollar that they spend is times two. And I think if they were to sign Blake Snell, who I think is looking for something like $30 million a year, that they might even be penalized more than that, which still the Yankees, I was reading an article like 2 days ago that they're worth $7 billion. Obviously, they don't just have $7 billion sitting there, but they, you know, they're fine. They could probably spend double and still make money.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, especially a brand like the Yankees that's pulling in across the world.
Right. All right. Moving down the list, the Blue Jays have signed Joey Votto to a minor league deal. I'll go first. I think this is good for baseball. I hope that he makes the club. I know he did some pressers where he was talking about that he's fine going down to the minors. He's fine earning his way back up. He's a Toronto kid. He was born there. He's a Blue Jays fan. He's going to do everything he can to, you know, seemingly retire on his own terms. I'm kind of shocked that it took this much for him to get a gig. I'm very happy it is where it is. I think this is just a great story all around.
Yeah, I mean, we love us Joey Votto, and in, you know, and I think a lot of people and I would agree with me. I know that Matt Carpenter has a connection to this organization, but if you could have signed Joey Votto instead of Matt Carpenter, you do that six times a week, right?
Yeah.
I think because now, you know, again, earlier in the winter, it sounded like Votto was looking for more of a full-time job. And
right.
As things got along, it probably did. And he might not have gone to the minors for anybody but Toronto, who knows. But yeah, I'm hopeful that he makes it. I hope he makes it back up to Toronto. I think it'd be a great thing.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thought. Like, did he ever talk to the Cardinals? What was that conversation mm-hmm. like if it did happen?
He talked to Jim Hayes. That's close enough.
He did talk to Jim Hayes, which I thought was a pretty good get by the Cat.
Yeah.
That was a great little interview, and Joey's personality and charm and everything that he brings is definitely a win. Not that Matt Carpenter doesn't have that, but you know, if I were to put money on who's going to have the better season, assuming Joey Votto does make it to the big league club in Toronto, I would assume a healthy Joey Votto outperforms a Matt Carpenter.
I would think. I mean, if not, it'd be a little bit straight. It could be a good Matt Carpenter year. Maybe that means it's a good Matt Carpenter year if he doesn't, but
yeah.
I don't think that's where you put your money.
Yeah. I was going to say, I the odds of we're going to see a Matt Carpenter resurgence a la Albert Pujols or his run with the Yankees just, seems really, really low. But maybe we can be positive.
He had a home run and a double in spring training. So that's more than I thought he was going to have.
You know, I did not know that he hit that home run. So that's great. He's, you know, he's got some juice in that bat. It's all going to be okay. All right. Moving down the list, the Savannah Bananas had a game at Minute Maid Stadium that they sold out, which first off is amazing. I'm kind of obsessed with this. I kind of go back and forth on the Bananas. I am such a baseball fan that I don't, I think baseball is fine the way that it is. But if people want to play circus baseball and have a bunch of like twerking and choreographed dancing and stilts involved, I think that that's also great. As long as, you know, that is kept out of MLB and
right,
it's held sacred. Why can't I think? Roger Clemens. I could not think of Roger Clemens' first name. Roger Clemens and Roy Oswalt pitched for the Savannah Bananas in that game. They both went an inning. I think they both went scoreless. And they look great. I'm not sure if this was something you were paying attention to.
I saw some talk about it as it happened. I didn't actually watch the videos or anything like that. I'm not sure I knew about Oswalt. I did know about Clemens. But yeah, I mean, you know, I know growing up, and they still go touring, but you know, the Globetrotters, we go around, they come to Little Rock and things of that nature. And, you know, it's fun. It's got a tie to the sport, but it's not really the sport, you know? And, so if the Bananas can do something like that and keep people excited, but yeah, I'm like you now, if they start trying to bring some of this stuff into MLB, then I think we're getting a little bit, we're taking the wrong lessons from what the Bananas are doing.
Yeah, and maybe it's just the faith that I have in Rob Manfred, but I would not be surprised if we saw a press conference where he was kind of floating the idea that if a fan catches a fly ball, that the player is out, or, you know, I don't know, weird banana baseball stuff like that. The Giants released JD Davis, which isn't particularly newsworthy, but kind of looking under the hood, I thought it was a little odd and a little, you know, after the conversation that was had around Brandon Crawford leaving the Giants and him kind of not really firing shots at Farhan Zaidi, but clearly seemed unhappy about how it all went, and particularly how the conversation with Farhan went. I thought this was interesting. So JD Davis won an arbitration hearing over the Giants earlier in the offseason. His agent essentially said that the Giants made an offer about 1 hour before the deadline, trying to basically get JD Davis to just agree to it because there was so little time left. JD did not agree to it. Him and his agent did not agree to it. They went to arbitration. It awarded him $6.9 million, which was about $450,000 or so more than he was originally offered from the Giants. But under the terms of the new CBA, that sum is not fully guaranteed until opening day. By cutting him now, the Giants could potentially owe him only 30 days of termination pay, about $1.11 million. And I bring that up because, first off, I didn't know that that's how it worked. And this is the first time I'm learning about this provision in the CBA. And I find it interesting that a team that is struggling narratively, the narrative is that they are struggling to sign the free agents that they want, is also treating players like this, which does feel a little slimy. And at the very least, it's not nice, is I guess how I feel about this.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't know anything about this either until I saw some reporting, because I was like, well, look, are they releasing him? But he should be getting everything, and obviously he's not. You know, and I agree, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel great. But I will say also, if you want to defend the Giants, that they did sign Matt Chapman, which is what, you know, kind of made him expendable.
Right.
And I mean, it seems unlikely they would just carry him to opening day and then cut him. Now, you know, could they have done this earlier, so maybe he had a better chance of getting another team? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know all the dynamics, but I agree that it comes across as not taking care of your players. And again, you're right with Brandon Crawford saying the same things, kind of that, hey, I was willing to be there. I was willing to be the backup guy. And, you know, the Giants, again, had a case there, but you put all this stuff together and you start wondering about the culture out there.
And I don't think, like, it would be hard for me to believe that when they went to the hearing, they knew that they were going to sign Matt Chapman or another replacement third baseman, and they were kind of, you know, 3D chessing this from a few months ago and kind of had all these machinations in place. I do think, like, you know, the Cardinals have been trial and file basically as long as I can remember. I think that most teams are going that direction because it's financially prudent. But I do think there's a line to walk in, you know, maybe you can pull this kind of thing with the JD Davises of the world and, you know, send them their offer at a time where you're kind of forcing them to either accept or trial. But yeah, it's just, it's just not how you want to hear people getting treated. And it's, especially for a team that's had a little bit of bad press recently, I just find the whole thing bizarre, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, and we'll see if that makes an impact. Of course, we don't know necessarily why free agents haven't been hesitant to go out to San Francisco. You know, Buster Posey says it's because of the town. Others, if it's more likely that it has been, you know, their offers have not been up to the, you know, you're probably not going to get Shohei Ohtani when you don't offer $1 billion. So it's hard to know, but it is something just to kind of watch and see how things go over the next little bit.
And how weird this entire offseason has been concerning free agents with, you know, there's obviously big names still out there, but even Brandon Belt, Mike Clevenger, JD Martinez, Tommy Pham, seems like he should be on a team somewhere. Yep. Michael A. Taylor should be on a team somewhere. This offseason has been very bizarre.
Yeah.
And there's kind of even like Kike Hernandez brought up, there was, he was discussing the idea of collusion and teams kind of working together to suppress salaries. And obviously that's one player who's probably feeling a bit bitter about the deal that he ended up getting. But it is interesting. There's, I tend to side with the players over the team. But you don't really know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not big on collusion in part because we know what happened in the '80s and how much they had to pay when that got caught out. And I don't feel like they're going to do anything like that again because of the money they have to pay out. But I also think that, you know, we've gotten to the point in baseball where pretty much everybody evaluates players in similar ways.
Right.
And so if one team's not signing them, there's a good chance that 29 other teams are have this, probably the same reason for not signing them.
Yeah, everyone but the Rockies. My Rockies, the only team that really is looking at players a little bit differently.
Yeah, like upside down.
Upside down. I got my opening day ticket, so I'm awesome. Looking forward to that. At least I'll get some nice baseball.
There you go.
From the other team. Okay, last bit of news I have. According to MLB on Fox, the league is considering lowering the maximum number of pitchers from 13 to 12, presumably to bring back the prominence of our starting pitchers. I think that this might be a haphazard way of trying to encourage pitchers to stop throwing max effort, to reduce injuries and to keep the bigger names alive or alive. They're all alive. They're okay. around and pitching and off the IL. But curious, I wanted to hear your thoughts, reducing the maximum number of pitchers. If you think that that is a sound strategy or if it's just, a waste of time, I guess.
I mean, I think you're right. It's more of a gimmick. I think if you're going to do this, it's just like anything else in baseball. It's going to take you starting it at the minor league level, at the lowest levels, and working your way up, because you can't expect, okay, it's not because they have enough, you know, Miles Michaelis isn't going, or Blake Snell or whoever isn't going six or seven innings because you have such a great bullpen. Part of the reason they're not going that is because they're not trained to go that far anymore, right? I mean, they're, and if you start making right. them go there, you are running the risk of more injuries, even though we're already seeing. So I think it's one of those things that if you wanted to say, hey, in 2031, we're going to change this roster thing, and you've got this much time to start planning and getting your pitchers developed to the point where you can have starters go six innings at the regular. But that might be more likely.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this change, it might be a good idea, but how long is it going to change to actually see the things that we want to see? Yeah, I agree. I also think it'll just lead to more abuse of the bus from Memphis to St. Louis or whatever your minor league affiliate is. Yeah. I don't know. There are large tectonic changes that need to happen to, I think, achieve what baseball is trying to do with these half measures, I guess.
And you start wondering, how do all these rules changes start to play into each other, right? Because you have, like you said, the options, which can only be optioned five times now, right?
Right.
And then you've got the three batter minimum. So if you know that, you know, you put all this stuff together and it starts, like, how do you construct a roster with all this? So
right.
I don't know.
All right. Well, that's the last piece of league news I have. I am led to believe that, Daniel, you have a game prepared.
I have three games.
Oh, no.
Prepared for you.
Yeah.
Because Ben has been tearing up the trivia in the Bird Scored.
That's right.
We're not saying that he's looking things up. We're not saying that either. But
I started a podcast 2 years ago so that someday one of the listeners would start a trivia and I would cheat to get the glory. You found me out. Just because you brought it up, I would like to say that, like, my performance has been incredible. I think I've impressed myself. Obviously, I've impressed you and the other people in there.
Yes. So I have brought three games here today.
Okay.
Probably none of which you are going to like.
Oh, great.
But I will give you the choice. We can play a version of Who Is This Guy?
Okay.
But not, I mean, basically it's Who Is This Guy, but maybe not somebody that you're going to get.
Oh,
quite
great.
So easily.
Okay.
It's none of this John Jay born in Miami type stuff. Okay.
Yeah, that Colton Wong one was too easy.
Yeah, that one too. We can play a twisted version of Who Charted.
Okay.
Or we can play a new game that Nate would make some weird, long, crazy title for. But basically, I have the daily calendar for the Cardinals, you know, the
okay.
tear off thing. And I have the questions or facts from the last 5 days.
Ooh, okay.
And I'll turn them into questions.
Okay. My instinct wants to go with the thing that we haven't done yet, the new game that you don't have a name for yet, that I guess if you have a good name for this, tweet at us at Talk About Birds. But yeah, I kind of want to do the new game because it's new.
All right. It's closer to the it's just really just trivia.
Well, I've been killing it at trivia. I'd like to, you know, point out I'm part of a weekly trivia team as well. I don't have a couple of craft beers in me, so I might do worse than I expect, but I'm seasoned.
I will say I play trivia at the local place and we won last night. So,
oh yeah.
Unfortunately, there were no Cardinals questions. I probably would have lost then.
Okay.
So champion. Okay. So we'll start with this. Question number one. I'm trying to convert this. 2018, Matt Carpenter had 564 at bats.
Okay.
He became the first major league player since 1997 to have that many at bats and not do what?
Yeah, that many at bats and he didn't do something. Okay, so what does Matt Carpenter do? 2018, he was still pretty solid. He's a terrible runner. That's where my mind goes. So my first thought is he didn't triple. My other thought is he didn't steal a base, but I have to imagine there's been other players with 500. You said at bats or plate appearances?
It's at bats.
At bats have not stolen bases, but there's gotta be guys that haven't tripled also. Let's see. Grand Slam. Maybe that's. No, there's got to be. I am going to say he did not triple in 2018 because he is a slow, terrible runner.
He did not hit into a double play.
What? Really?
In 2018, he did not hit to a single double play in 564 at bats. Wow. For the first time since 1997 when Craig Biggio did the same.
That is amazing. I mean, I guess that's he's at the top of the lineup and there's less opportunity. Yeah. That's amazing. That's I'm shocked by that.
Question number two. In 1922.
Oh, God.
Rogers Hornsby had a hit, at least one hit. In
yeah.
How many games, which set a record for the most games in a single season with at least one hit?
He had it. Okay. So obviously he, okay. The longest hit streak is 46. He didn't break that.
Well, no. I will correct. Stop you right now. He had at least one hit in how many games.
Right.
During
the
season.
I'm trying to think my way through this problem. Okay. So he had to have some long hitting streaks in there because I'm assuming this is a large number. He obviously didn't break 46. I don't remember what his longest streak was. I'm going to say, also, I don't know how many games were played in 1922. Obviously, it was less than 162. But I don't know. So I'm going to say, geez. He had a hit in 137 games.
Oh, very, very close.
Oh.
135.
Hey, I mean.
It's not bad.
If that's Price is Right rules, I lose. But if not, Nate's not here, so I say we don't play that.
All right. Also, DiMaggio's hit streak is 56. And that would have been after. It would have been after this. So.
All right.
All right.
Did that. I think
yeah,
my.
I see what you're saying.
Okay. Yeah.
And it worked. One and one.
Yeah.
Okay. Twice in the history of the Cardinals, they have had back-to-back rookies of the year. I should make you name both of them.
Wow.
I will not. The first pair is 54-55.
Okay.
With Wally Moon and Bill Burton. What's the other pair? And when did they do it?
Other pair. Wow. I'm trying to think of just rookie of the years that I can remember. I know Albert won. And did somebody else win around him? Yachty didn't win around him, right? I think I would remember that. Who are the other? Did JD Drew win rookie of the year? Maybe. Oh my goodness. I do not know the answer to this. I am going to say Albert Pujols and, geez, it wasn't Waino. Who are the good players around then? Man, I really have absolutely no idea. I'm going to say Albert Pujols and Yadi Molina. I've nothing's coming to mind.
You've got to go a little bit farther back.
Further back. Okay.
1985, Vince Coleman.
Vince Coleman.
1986, Todd Worrell.
Wow. There's no way I would have gotten either. I don't think I knew Vince Coleman won Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. Well, yep.
I'm an idiot.
All right. One and two.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. In 1962, Stan Musial was 41 years old. Sorry.
Okay.
Where did he finish in the National League hitting race?
National League hitting. Was this his final year? Okay, it doesn't say that. Okay.
No, I think he played 63. It was his final year. Okay. So I think
so he's 41 years old. Because if memory serves, I'm trying to like visualize his baseball reference page in my mind, which I've looked at so many times. If memory serves, he was pretty much great up until his final year. So I think he plays fairly high. I bet it's over 300. I'm going to guess that he was fourth place in that year.
He was third.
Damn it.
Hitting 330. Behind Damn. Tommy Davis and Frank Robinson. All right. Final one.
I don't think I know who Tommy Davis is.
Tommy Davis is not one that I'm necessarily familiar with. I think he was a Dodger. I'd have to look. And okay. See.
I know Frank Robinson. We got that at least.
There you go. This one, I think you got a pretty good chance at.
Okay.
2015, MLB announced a franchise four for each team. Name the four Cardinals.
2015, they announced a franchise four. I don't remember that. I'm going to go with Stan Musial.
Okay.
Bob Gibson.
Okay.
Those two are obvious. Now it's kind of your flavor of player. I am going to guess they went with Slaughter and it's either Hornsby or Smith. I'm going to say Ozzie Smith.
It was Hornsby.
Damn it.
And Brock.
Damn. That makes sense.
You did all right.
Yeah.
You did all right. You did better on that one than you would have done on either of the other two. I promise you.
Okay. I'll take it.
I'll save them for next time. Maybe all I can right. get Nate. I can get Nate to look foolish as well.
Yeah. I always appreciate that. Well, thank you, Daniel. Thank you, C70, for coming in and replacing Nate. Maybe this will be a permanent thing. Maybe he'll never come back and I'm just going to make you do the show with me for the foreseeable future. But thank you again. Again, check out all of Daniel's shows and content and Twitter and Substack and everything that he provides to the Cardinals universe and online world. I really appreciate you being here. And I guess just thanks again.
Well, thank you for having me. Always, always enjoy it.
All right. Well, talk to you soon, and let's go Cardinals. No. No, we're doing it my way tonight. Who cares?
That's right. Care.
Whatever.
Who cares what Nate does?
So I'll just play the song there, and then I'll welcome you.
That's fine.